Welcome to the OFR Farm Report, your look at the Atlanta Braves minor league system, brought to you by OutfieldFlyRule.com, hosted by Andy Harris and Matt Kritzberg.
And this is Andy Harris, and welcome to the OFR Farm Report. With me, as always, Matt Kritzberg. Matt, how are you?
It's going pretty good. I think there might have been a couple things that happened in the Atlanta Braves farm system last week.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Literally, as we finished recording and I started editing, word started coming down that some of the promotions that we were anticipating and talking about on last week's podcast were coming to fruition as we were speaking. Future Andy even made an appearance to talk about Christian Pache probably coming on. It turns out that was just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, we're expecting a lot of these promotions for weeks now, but we weren't expecting them all to come in about a 10-minute period.
Yeah. All right. Well, why don't we go ahead and start with that, since that's the big news of the week for the Braves minor league. Let's talk about who moved on up.
Well, we're moving on up. Moving on up.
All right. Well, you're the Mississippi guy. Give us the lowdown on the guys moving up to Gwinnett from Mississippi.
Well, the guys that moved on up, I mean, it was a total bloodbath as far as the Mississippi team was concerned. I mean, they were just barely on the periphery of the playoff picture anyway, and this probably took care of any hope of that. I mean, the top three players in the farm system, Christian Pache, Drew Waters, and Ian Anderson were all promoted. There was also a fourth one promoted, Tucker Davidson. He's not one of the top three prospects in the system. However, he's leading the Southern League in ERA, so it was a definite blow to the roster. They did get some replacements that we'll go into later on, but having those four guys move on up to Gwinnett, Gwinnett's very much in the playoff picture. They do lead their division at the moment, and they're a pretty solid chance they're going to make the playoffs, and I think it's going to be a good experience for these guys to be in a playoff race.
And we'll talk a little bit about any of the chances that these guys could see themselves in Atlanta, maybe in September or possibly even the postseason. The guy I want to talk about briefly didn't get promoted. Unfortunately, he had an injury at pretty much the worst possible time. That's Kyle Muller, who in his way has been on par or maybe just right underneath Anderson and Davidson this year. As far as performance goes, do you think if he hadn't gotten injured, do you think he would have moved on up as well?
I think so. I mean, he had some ups and downs during the season, but he was never really horrible because outside of maybe one or two starts early on. He was really inefficient a lot of starts. Like a lot of starts, he might have gone five innings, might have thrown shutout ball over that five innings, but he'll end up having thrown 100 pitches and walking four or five guys in the process. But he was really good at managing the damage of it. Now, whether they would have used him as a starter at Gwinnett because the rotation's already full up there, or may have put him in the bullpen, at least as a temporary solution to try to do something with the left-handers in the bullpen in the organization, it kind of remains to be seen. But, yeah, definitely, and we don't know the extent of the injury, but it's starting to look more and more like he may not pitch anymore, at least for the remainder of the regular season.
And, of course, with those guys moving up, it gives opportunities for other people. In this case, the big guy moving up to Mississippi was Nolan Kingham coming up from Florida. Nolan Kingham has done a pretty nice job for Florida this year, probably most notably just being able to throw three nine-inning complete games in his tenure with Florida, which helped bring the total of nine-inning complete games thrown by any pitcher in Florida Fire Frogs history to four. So of the four nine-inning complete games in their franchise history, Kingham has three of them. And he's gotten off to a really nice start with Mississippi.
Yeah, first start out, he went five innings, gave up five hits, just one run. Only struck out one batter, but, I mean, that's okay. I mean, he did what he needed to do, get batters out. So that's a really nice first start. And then he followed that up a few days later with a second start. Gave up two runs over six innings on just five hits, struck out five and walked one. So, yeah, he's been off to a good start so far. And I think this will be a good chance for him to get about a half dozen starts under his belt before the end of the regular season and start fresh. And he might be heading the rotation at Mississippi to start 2020.
Yeah, and last week we'd already talked about Phil Pfeiffer coming up. So Pfeiffer and Kingham and then De La Cruz and the cast of thousands filling out the rest of that rotation. Looks like maybe a little Connor Johnstone, a little bit of Claudio Castillo, and just basically seems like whoever's going to be fresh that given day is going to start that day.
Yeah, and Pfeiffer got off to a pretty good start as well. Unfortunately, in his first start, he it was a rain-shortened start. He only pitched two innings that night, and he got suspended, and they continued the game the next night. Obviously, he didn't pitch the second part of it, but he had gone off to a really good start. He, in the first two innings, he'd pitched two perfect innings and struck out four. He was off to a really good start, and who knows what would have happened if he'd be able to keep going. But he did make a second start later on in the week. He pitched fairly well in that start, gave up two runs over five innings. Only two hits, did strike out six, but one of his old bugaboos kind of popped up. He walked four over those five innings, and you weren't really seeing those problems at Florida. But that's still an effective start, and hope to see a few more of those over the next few weeks.
Yeah, and Kingham is a guy, I think we talked about this before, I could see him actually improving his performance numbers as he goes up. He's very kind of defense, ground ball oriented, and as he goes up, the defenses should improve and provide him with some outs that maybe he was not actually getting all the time at Florida. Another guy I could probably say that for is the guy who came up from Rome to Florida to backfill Kingham, and that is Odalvy Javier. Now, you're not going to see Javier on many prospect lists, including ours. His stuff is okay, but what Javier is, and he's someone I've enjoyed watching pitch for 3 years now. He had racked up an insane number of innings pitched for Rome. He is just a great competitor. He will almost always keep his teams in games. He's a smart pitcher. He typically can get hitters to put the ball in play. And again, as defenses get better behind him, he actually might see an uptick in performance as well.
Yeah, there's going to be plenty of opportunity. At least for the Florida and Mississippi rosters and on the starting rotations next year. So it's wide open for a number of guys. If they just step up and make the most of their opportunities, they can earn themselves some spots, because there's not a lot of the high-end prospects that are going to be taking up the space like they did this season.
And then if all the action and discussion was around Gwinnett earlier in the week, later this week, and even as far as today, we're recording this on Monday evening, Rome has been the subject of discussion. Three 2019 draft picks have been promoted up to Rome. Right-hander Ricky DeVito, outfielder Michael Harris, and just announced today and making his Rome debut tonight, first baseman Bryce Ball. Let's start with Ball. Now, this is someone we've been eyeballing as a, no pun intended, as a potential promote for a long time now. And I suspect, and it looked like from playing time, he may have been banged up a little bit a couple weeks ago, which may have delayed this move. But an injury to Griffin Benson and an injury to Drew Campbell have been the motivating factors for these moves. But I think we're safe to say that Bryce Ball has been demonstrating he's been ready for this for a while now.
Yeah, and he's already off to a quick start. This is his first game tonight. He had a double off the wall in his first plate appearance. He hit it into a bases loaded double play, but drove in a run on his second appearance. He's already starting to make his presence felt. But like I said, I mean, it's a matter of just finding room for these guys, because, I mean, I don't know why they haven't promoted Griffin Benson before now. But then again, that injury opened up a little bit of opportunity, and it's obvious that Bryce Ball is going to start next season at Rome. So might as well just go ahead and give him a taste of it, let him get acclimated a little bit, and get ready for next season.
Also expected to start next season, Rome, Michael Harris. Now, this was a really interesting promotion, and quite frankly, I did not see this one coming. I thought for sure, I suspected Michael Harris was going to promote it, but I thought he would go to Danville first, because he's been in the GCL. He's been tearing it up in the GCL. But he's a high school draft pick. He's from Stockbridge High School here in Metro Atlanta. This is actually the first high school prep draftee to make his way to Rome in his first professional year since 2007. And it's actually that was a kind of a reliever on an emergency kind of call-up basis. He's the first real prep drafty that's an actual prospect since second-round pick Eric Campbell back in 2006. Now, if you don't recall who Eric Campbell is, it's okay. He really didn't make a lot of noise and was out of baseball within, I think, 5 or 6 years later, but never made it to the majors. But still, it's nearly unprecedented. You know, not even in the wild and woolly days of the rebuild had we moved up a prep star as fast as this. So, Matt, what do you make of this promotion? Were you as surprised as I was?
Oh, yes. Especially a double promotion in August. I mean, he was in the GCL, bypassed Danville completely, straight to full season Rome. They must see something there. I mean, obviously he'd gotten off to a good start in the GCL, but to bypass Danville completely, I mean, that is a big step. That'd be like somebody getting promoted from high A to triple A late in the season. And it's just incredible to see. And like you said, it's not like this happens on a regular basis. I mean, even Copy wouldn't have pulled this kind of stuff. But I mean, obviously there's something there they want to see how he can do over the next few weeks at Rome.
Yeah. Now, we did see this last year with Trey Harris, but of course that was different because, you know, Trey Harris, you know, played SEC baseball. That's a whole different level of competition than obviously what Michael Harris. So we got a tradition now. Every year, I guess we're going to have to promote a Harris from the GCL to Rome because that's 2 years in a row, right?
They're going to make you look bad at the family reunion.
Oh, man. It's like, yeah, I got a double promotion. What did you get, Andy? Nothing. I got a podcast. Yeah. Woo. I'm just kidding. I love our podcast. All right. And then the third guy, I think we'll save a lot of the conversation around Ricky DeVito later. I actually was able to take in his Rome debut this weekend. So when we talk about the Rome Braves a little bit later on, I'll kind of dig into what I saw from Mr. DeVito. And then the last promotion, this happened today as well, coming up from the GCL to Danville. A late round pick from last year, first baseman Mason Byrne, moved up from the GCL to Danville, where quite frankly, he should have been anyway, just based on his age and experience. But, you know, they had a lot of first baseman types in Danville already. Byrne will move up. He'll split time with Ray Hernandez at first base, and that will open up more playing time for Mekhi Backstrom in the GCL. No thoughts on Mason Byrne?
Not a one, but it's good for him. Just don't know enough about him to comment, but I mean, it's obviously, I guess, it's a backfill for Bryce Ball, and hey, you take this last couple of weeks, gets you the opportunity. Show you've got something out there and see if that can get you bumped up a little bit to start 2020.
All right. Well, before we go into the affiliate wrap-up, I wanted to get your thoughts on the potential impact on the Atlanta Braves of these guys that just came up. Now, obviously, none of these guys are on the 40-man roster. However, Alex Anthopoulos had some interesting comments, the Braves GM, indicating that basically everybody is in kind of tryouts right now and that they aren't really going to look at things like service time and 40-man roster status when they try to figure out who the best 25 men are to take into the playoffs. That would seem to open up an opportunity for the likes of not just Pache and Waters and Anderson and Davidson, but really anybody that's currently at Gwinnett that's not on the 40-man roster. So, Matt, I'm going to ask you, if you were going to place a bet on any one of these guys to make it into the postseason roster that's not currently on the 40-man roster, who would you put money down on?
That's tough because I could make a case for any of the four big guys to get up there. I'm going to say Tucker Davidson of this bunch has the best chance. As we've seen, the bullpen in Atlanta has had a lot of issues, but mainly the problem is on the left side. There's just not a lot of depth there. Sean Newcomb and Jerry Blevins are your only left-handed relievers at the moment. Newcomb's been a little iffy here as of late, and Blevins really is a loogie, but isn't used that way. And he's kind of, I don't know, he's kind of a weirdly defined role. They just come in, bring him in as kind of mop-up duty, pitch an inning or two, when they're up five or down five. I mean, it's not like they have to have him in that spot. And I wouldn't be surprised if something happened with him at some point, an IL visit or something like that, that would help to try to make room for somebody else. But Tucker Davidson, he got off to had a good first start at Gwinnett, but he's a guy who has a really good ground ball rate, strikes out a lot of hitters, led the Southern League in ERA. So it wouldn't be 100% shock to see something happen with him later on this season to get up to Atlanta, because the left-handed relievers at Gwinnett haven't exactly put themselves out there to say, hey, I need to be promoted, because you saw the likes of Thomas Burrows. He just got demoted back down to Mississippi. Corbin Klaus, I think, has been scored on in three straight outings for Gwinnett. A.J. Minter, he's kind of off and on at Gwinnett as well, but nobody's really making the case for themselves. But Tucker Davidson, I mean, he's a guy who could possibly jump up there.
Yeah, I think that possibility definitely is there. Now, the Braves do have a spot open in their 40-man roster. It would not surprise me at all if Davidson has another good outing. His first start was really strong for Gwinnett. Unlike Ian Anderson, who kind of struggled in his first AAA start, which should never be surprising with the differences in the ball between AAA and AA. Quite frankly, I'm more shocked that Davidson seemed to acclimate as quickly as he did, more so than that Anderson struggled. Anderson was better in his second start, as I'm sure you'll get into when we do talk about Gwinnett. But I'm going to go with Christian Pache, though. And I think it has a little bit to do with just how the state of the Braves outfield is. Adam Duvall has come crashing back down to earth. Ender Inciarte is playing well, but he's also reportedly still nursing kind of a sore quadricep. And of course, Austin Riley has an injured knee. Who knows when he's going to come back? That would seem to open up at least a possibility that an outfielder could be tapped to possibly take a spot either on the bench or in the starting three. And between the two of Pache and Waters, I think Pache, his defensive ability is going to probably give him the nod. And that's not to say that Waters is poor defensively by any stretch, but Pache is just on another planet. And if you're going to give playing time to somebody that's young like that and inexperienced, at least you want to know that they're going to be able to handle the job defensively.
Yeah, and the way you're seeing them being treated at Gwinnett right now, where Waters is hitting leadoff, and I think that's mainly just to get him as many plate appearances as possible. Developmentally, he's not quite as advanced as Pache. Just not many close, he's younger. He's less experienced. So I think they're just trying to pound the plate appearances, get him as many as possible, see as many of these AAA pitchers and their more advanced approaches as they can. Pache, he's hitting six, and that's kind of strange because he hasn't hit six anywhere around the sixth spot for Mississippi this season. He's either been hitting leadoff or hitting second all year long, but now all of a sudden he's hitting six. And I think that's kind of – they're trying to get him used to that spot because there's a more than zero chance that he could be doing that for Atlanta at some point in the next few weeks, depending on how Adam Duvall does. Because I was looking at stats earlier. It's very small sample size, of course, but, I mean, he's destroying left-handed pitching. He is not hitting right-handers at all in that small sample size. He's striking out more than 40% of the time. He's only hitting .208 with a .255 on base. They're not going to be able to keep that going for very long, especially with the injuries to Markakis and Swanson. They need some offense from the five to the nine spots. I mean, and literally, Ender Inciarte is the only one that's producing right now at the big league level in that five to nine range. So I think they might just give Duvall maybe another week or two. And if he doesn't right the ship, I think they could be looking a different direction. And also, like you mentioned about Austin Riley, and he's scheduled to go in and see Dr. James Andrews on Monday. And I think that's going to be a matter of trying to determine severity of the injury. If it looks like he's not going to play again this season, put him on the 60-day injured list, and that frees up a second roster spot. So that could really help open up some opportunities for some guys.
Can you imagine a playoff outfield this year of Acuna, Pache, and Waters?
It is a non-zero chance that is going to happen. I mean, if Duvall's not playing particularly well, if Ender's quad starts acting up, you need two outfielders. Where else are you going to get them this time of year?
That is both thrilling and absolutely terrifying, Matt.
Absolutely. You're going to go in with the young guys, go all in.
All right. All right. You ready to talk about Gwinnett?
All right. Let's do that. All right, for the Gwinnett Stripers this week, they didn't have a lot of great results on the field. They were 2-3 this week, but as we mentioned, they had a number of big promotions. You had Pache, Waters, Anderson, and Davidson, but also they added Lucas Duda to the lineup. They signed him after he'd been released a few weeks ago by the Kansas City Royals, and they've got Duda playing a little bit of first base and DH, and I think that's just kind of help kind of keep him fresh for putting him on the 40-man roster and let him play in September. Be a kind of a second pitch hitter, and if Matt Joyce continues to not produce at the big league level, maybe take a place as a primary pinch hitter for later in September or even the postseason. But that helped the offense out some. But what we saw on the pitching staff, I mentioned that Anderson, not a great first start, but obviously getting acclimated to the AAA baseball. And we've seen it, being that this is the first year, it's hard to determine how long that acclimation period is going to be. We saw in the case of like Jeremy Walker, for example, a few weeks ago, he had a couple really bad outings after getting cleared from Mississippi, and they just kind of took off from there after those two outings. In Anderson's case, it only lasted one outing because second outing, he had a rough first inning, I believe it was, and then he just kind of took off after that and just dominated the rest of the start. So, like I said, I think it's going to be another couple of starts, and who knows what may happen with him in September. You had another couple of guys, Bryce Wilson, had another really, really good start, and he's just been absolutely dominant as of late.
I think you mean OFR pitcher of the week, Bryce Wilson there, Matt.
Oh, obviously so. Now, like I said, he's the second week in a row he's earned that esteemed honor, but over his last four starts, he has a 0.33 ERA and a 0.889 whip. And every time I post those stats on Twitter, I still get people that want to argue once in a while saying, oh, great, what's he doing? Did he learn something besides a fastball? Or why can't he do this at the big league level? And as we say every time, I mean, the guy's just 21 years old. He's racking up experience. He's doing this in a huge offensive environment, and he's just getting stronger by the day. And, I mean, he is going to get September starts, especially if they can clinch early enough. If they clinch mid-month, for example, he might get a couple of starts later on in the month. And right behind him is going to be Kyle Wright, because Wright, he's had a 6-inning, 1-run start on the week and now has 6 straight quality starts. He has a 2.08 ERA and a whip of just under 1 during that 6 start stretch. He's just been as dominant, and he's striking out a whole lot of hitters as well. So he and Wilson are kind of carrying this rotation right now. Now, a guy who's really not helping his cause right now is Touki Toussaint. Of course, we sent down from Atlanta a few weeks ago, and we've been in relief all season long, been not really particularly thriving in that role. He had one good start after getting moved down to Gwinnett, but he's had a couple really rough ones since then. He had one start last week. He went 4 1/3 innings, gave up 7 runs, and just had base runners everywhere. And it's tough to watch, but hopefully he can right the ship after if we got about 2-3 more starts he's probably going to get this season. So hopefully he can help get things going right going into the offseason. Now, as far as the relievers go, a couple guys that didn't do really well this week. I talked about Corbin Clausen, who's scored upon in several different outings. Wes Parsons as well, although his were in long relief, like he'd give up a run in 3 innings or 2 runs in 3 innings when relieving some of these starters that haven't been able to go very long. Chad Sabatka and Jacob Webb didn't do particularly well either. They got scored upon in their outings during the week. Now, A.J. Minter, he's done okay, not spectacular, but he did pitch a couple of outings this week where he didn't give up any runs. Also didn't walk anybody, which is big for him. Now, of course, the guy who we want to keep an eye on, and I think we're going to see a decent amount of him in September, is Patrick Weigel. We haven't seen him pitch at the big league level yet, and he's spent a couple of visits up to the big club, but he did have a scoreless 2-inning stint on Monday, got promoted to Atlanta after that, and is still on the roster as of this moment, but I'm sure that will probably change on Tuesday when they most likely add a position player to it. Now, Oscar Ynoa, he pitched 3 2/3 scoreless innings of relief. He's back in the bullpen as of right now, but he piggybacked on Touki's start where he didn't go about 4 1/3 innings, but Ynoa came in and pitched 3 2/3 scoreless innings, and that helped his cause as well. And I'm sure we'll see him with the big club in September as well.
thinking about Patrick Weigel. Now, I'm generally a Brian Snitker fan, but why in the world didn't Patrick Weigel pitch in a 6-2 lead against the Marlins?
There were a number of questionable bullpen decisions during the weekend, but that being one of them. I made the comment on Sunday because Matt Joyce had to hit against a left-hander. And my feeling was, wouldn't it have been nice to at least have Alex Jackson up there? I know Alex Jackson strikes out a ton, but put him up there against a left-hander, you at least got a shot of him hitting it out of the park. And my observation was, why have Patrick Weigel on the roster when you know he's not going to be used? And you could have at least had that third catcher where you could at least have a shot of knocking the ball out of the park and making something happen. But I digress. Now, as far as the offense goes, Drew Waters and Christian Pache, they made their debuts this week, and they already got off to quick starts. Waters was 8 out of 23, had two doubles, and his first AAA home run. Pache was 5 out of 18, and more impressively for him, he walked four times. I mean, I don't know if he had any weeks in Mississippi this year where he walked four times, but I mean, that's a really good sign for his progress. Pedro Florimon actually carried the offense this week. He had five hits, and all five were for extra bases. He had a double, a triple, and three home runs. The aforementioned Alex Jackson didn't have a great week, though. He just went 2 for 13, and he struck out 9 times. Kind of the whole all-or-nothing approach they use is, unfortunately, is a whole lot of nothing this week.
You got to love the Alex Jackson experience. You want to talk about Mississippi?
Let's do that, too. Like I talked about, we talked about, they had a lot of promotions this week, and they kind of cleaned house, and they did some backfilling, like we talked about, with getting Pfeiffer and Kingdom some starts, and they're doing really well for themselves so far. Like we said, Kingdom had two good starts. Pfeiffer started off with a good start before it got suspended, and then had another good start. And like I said, they're kind of filling in around the edges there. Connor Johnstone looks like he's going to be part of the rotation, at least for the short term. He had another five-inning effort, just gave up two runs, and that seems to be par for the course for him. Jaceel De La Cruz did not have a great start this week. He only went 2 1/3 innings and gave up three runs and had a pretty large pitch count, so they pulled him at that point. Claudio Custodio, he is another guy who they've kind of installed him as a kind of a spot starter where he can go maybe 3-4 innings, but his ERA for the season is down to 2.08, and he's done some really good work. I know he's probably more of an organizational arm, but it's been interesting to see his progress this season. And some of the relievers had really good weeks, too. Kurt Hoekstra, Bradley Roney had a really good week as well. And Thomas Burrows. Thomas Burrows had been sent down again from Gwinnett. He's just been kind of bouncing back and forth all season. But he's been absolutely dominant during his time at Mississippi this season. He had one outing during the week as a two-inning scoreless outing, and he struck out 5 during that time. And I believe he hasn't walked a single hitter during his 13 or so innings that he's had at Mississippi this season. So I think it's just a matter of there's just no room for any more left-handers at Gwinnett right now, and they had to send somebody down. Unfortunately, he was the odd man out.
I also wonder with him and Corbin Klaus having kind of some difficulties at Gwinnett. They're both very dependent on that really hard breaking slider. If the AAA baseball with the lowered seams, they're just having a hard time getting that same break for that pitch.
I think that very well could be the case, but it seems like they've kind of favoring Klaus as far as leaving him at AAA and moving Burrows down to AA. I guess they feel like there's really nothing more for Klaus to gain by being moved down.
All right, well, I'm going to talk briefly about the Fire Frogs. They had their usual rain-soaked week, but they did get in all the games until today. They had a doubleheader scheduled today, and it was completely rained out. But they went 3-3 last week, and they got some really good starting pitching performances. Again, Brooks Wilson, who has really shown well in the rotation since coming up from the bullpen, pitched an 8-inning game, 100 pitches. That was his first time over 100 pitches. So and he only allowed one run. So Brooks Wilson really making a case for possibly being either in the Fire Frogs or Mississippi rotation for next year. Another guy that had a pretty good week, Matt Hartman, delivered not one but two quality starts and pitched a complete game yesterday in a losing effort. Yesterday being Sunday. And then, of course, we talked about Odalvy Javier. Numbers-wise, his first start in Florida doesn't look all that impressive. He gave up a two-run homer in the second inning, but then we went on a long streak of retiring guys. I think he retired 10 batters at one point before the wheels kind of finally came off. Like I said, he's a battler, and I think he'll settle in there in Florida pretty well. But the big news out of Florida is the return of Drew Lugbauer to the land of the living hitters. After a long cold spell, he has really taken off. This last week, he's gone 8-for-25. That's a .320 batting average, .370 on base, and he's hit two home runs for a .640 slugging percentage. That was good enough to earn him OFR Position Player of the Week honors. So Drew Lugbauer, great to have you back. And also kind of having a good week after being a couple fallow offensive weeks. Catcher Logan Brown, who was promoted from Rome about a month and a half ago and started out pretty well, then kind of petered out. Looks like he's coming back a little bit, hitting .273, .304, .364 in the last 7 days. So that's good news for him. And otherwise, there's not much to talk about Florida.
Lugbauer, it seems like he's almost kind of channeling his inner Braxton Davidson this season. You know, he kind of has the same pattern where he'll have a strong week or two, then he'll just kind of disappear for weeks at a time. It's really strange. Very similar.
Yeah. You know, the Florida State League's just, it's a tough place to hit. It's a tough place for sluggers. So I don't know. There's still time. Lugbauer's still a pretty young man. He's only 22. I think people forget that for a college player, he was a pretty young college player. You know, hopefully he's found something here.
And I don't see any reason where why he couldn't start next season at Mississippi. I don't think there's really anybody standing in his way to play up there. And it'd be interesting to see. I mean, it's not a whole lot better offensive environment, but I mean, at least you could play a decent number of games per week, and most of them actually being nine innings.
Yeah, and I think that's probably what's going to happen with Lugbauer in Mississippi. And I you mentioned earlier Bryce Ball might start in Rome. I actually think he'll probably start in Florida. And with Backstrom being the first baseman in Rome. But we'll see. We'll probably have a whole episode on where we think placement's going to be maybe in this offseason. So once things kind of clear up a little bit. All right, the fun stuff was happening in Rome. They had a really good week to keep their playoff hopes alive. They beat West Virginia up at West Virginia, took two games out of three there, and then came home and really did well against the first place Augusta Green Jackets. In a four-game series, they took three out of four. As I mentioned earlier, I was at the games on Saturday. And it was a doubleheader because the game on Friday had been rained out. That rainout allowed me to see the Rome debut of Ricky DeVito. Now, I had seen DeVito pitch already for Danville back in July, so I kind of knew what to expect. What I saw, he seemed sharper with Danville, and I think maybe it just was adrenaline. But for that first inning, he was really elevating the ball. And DeVito, he really makes his hey, down in the zone. He has a good heavy fastball and a good sinker and a slider slash curveball. I'm not sure exactly what it is. Sometimes it looks like one, sometimes it looks like the other. But when he's on, he is pounding the zone low, getting a lot of ground balls, getting a lot of pop-ups. He did in the third inning saw off somebody's bat, which is something I saw him do twice in Danville. He's the kind of guy that I imagine the opposing team doesn't want to face, especially this level, because those bats are expensive. But early on, they were making some good contact off of him as he was elevating the ball. He settled down. And then the fourth inning came around. He got two quick outs and then walked
the next guy he faced.
Then there was a soft ground ball hit to third. Braulio Vasquez was the third baseman. Had a real tough play, came in charging hard on the ball, was kind of an awkward angle to first base, but he tried to make the throw anyway. I think if he had to do it again, I'm sure he would have put it in his pocket, because I don't even know if a good throw would have gotten him. But unfortunately, the ball sailed into right field. One run scored. Then there was DeVito gave up another solid hit next, and then he was out of the game. So by the end of that inning, it was after the Braves were up 1-0 to start the inning. It was 3-1 at the end of the inning. To come into the game to relieve DeVito was right-hander Trey Riley, who's a guy that we've talked about a lot. And when he came on with two outs, he proceeded to throw a high fastball for strike one, a breathtakingly good slider for strike two, and then just blew it past the hitter for strike three. I didn't see a radar reading, but it had to have been in the high 90s. It was just a beautiful sequence, 1-2-3. And I, for one, was like, wow, is this where we finally getting the true Trey Riley? Sad to say, I have to report that the next inning was completely the opposite. I don't use this word a lot, but he was wild. He could not find the strike zone if you had given him a map. He ended up walking four batters and hitting one in what looked particularly painful for the batter, and did not record a single out in the fifth inning. Jose Mantilla came on after that and unfortunately gave up a few hits. So by the time the smoke cleared, fourth inning, it was 10-1 Augusta at that point. Now the Braves came back in the bottom of the inning with to put four up. So that fourth inning ended up being almost an hour by itself. It would, and really lengthened what should have been a short seven inning game. It turned out to be a long day. The Braves would add on a few more runs, but couldn't quite complete the comeback. And that was the one game that they lost. They lost 10-7 on that game. Overall, I liked what I saw from DeVito. Then the next game turned out to be pretty much the opposite kind of game. It was a complete pitching duel. Ryan Shetter got the emergency start. He's mostly been pitching out of the bullpen for Rome and a little bit for Florida, but mostly for Rome. He pitched fantastically, really doing a good job mixing his pitches. And now he's kind of an advanced pitcher. He went to an SEC college. He probably should be in Florida, but I don't know if you've noticed, Matt, but we've got a lot of pitchers.
It seems to be that way. And of course, in Florida, they don't exactly play a whole lot either. You can get away with two-man rotation.
Yeah, almost. So he traded zeros with the Augusta starter, Seth Corey, who's a name you'll probably hear more. I'm sure he's going to be going up the prospect list here soon for San Francisco. He was a third-round pick a couple years ago out of high school, but he's been phenomenal this season in the Sally. So, and he was phenomenal against the Braves. Fortunately, the Braves did end up prevailing. That game actually continued to be 0-0. Reliever Casey Kalik, and I think I've been saying Casey Kalich, according to Kevin Carl, the Rome radio announcer, it is pronounced Casey Kalik. Kalik looked great. Two innings, no runs. He was absolutely dominating. He's a guy that you always hear along with the tagline. Well, he should move quickly up the organization. Sometimes that's true, sometimes it's not. But this case, I think it probably is true. He looks like a guy that could possibly be helping Atlanta within just a year or so.
In his case, I mean, he could either be A.J. Minter, who kind of rocketed up through the organization, or he could be Thomas Burrows, who was a college pitcher as well at Alabama, and he just kind of stalled out at Rome for the longest time before starting his move up.
Yeah, I think he's going to follow more of the A.J. Minter track. I just think his stuff is that good. The game was finally won in extra innings, and because it's minor league baseball, the eighth inning is an extra inning on a doubleheader. The bottom of the eighth featured the really dumb minor league extra inning rule where a runner starts on second base. Fortunately, the rule benefited the Braves this time. The first batter on the first pitch of the bottom of the inning hit a sacrifice bunt down the third base line. And I guess we got some payback from the first game because he sent that ball into right field and the runner on second scored for a walk-off sacrifice bunt, 1-0.
And for anyone who hasn't seen this extra inning monstrosity, it's understandable why they do it, because they don't want to play these minor league parks. They don't want to play 15, 17 inning games, so they do it this way. But that's how the strategy tends to go, is with that runner on second base. Generally, the first hitter bunts, tries to get the run over to third, and then try to get a sack fly or some other kind of just put the ball in play, just get the runner home, and that's your run. So, yeah, it's just feel the excitement.
Yeah, it's super cheap. Another guy pitching for Rome that I wanted to give some kudos to, Dilmer Mejia, has been absolutely great this last week. Saturday night, he pitched 7 innings, only gave up 4 hits, no runs, and struck out 5, and quite frankly, I think that might be his best start of his pro career. And even before that, he had a really nice start against West Virginia. That was a 6-inning start, giving up only 3 hits and struck out 6 in that one. So Dilmer Mejia on a good roll for Rome. Ricky DeVito looks like he's going to settle in nicely there as well. On the offensive side, again, the top of the order, fantastic for Rome, headed by Justin Dean, Greg Cullen, and Braden Shoemake. Those guys, they just keep hitting.
All of them had an on-base percentage over 400
on the week. And just since the beginning of August, they also have OBPs over 400. Justin Dean has really found his power stroke as well. Since the beginning of August, he now has 3 home runs and is hitting .361, .489, .684 with 7 stolen bases, and that's only in 10 games. So don't know what he's still doing in Rome, but I'm glad he's there, because the Rome Braves would be completely dead in the water. They are currently 2 games back out of first place. There are 2 teams tied for first right now. So Rome still very much in the playoff picture thanks to their strong week. After Gwinnett, definitely the most likely Braves team to go to the playoffs.
And that could very well be the reason these guys are still there, because I mean, obviously Florida has no shot of making it. At least they want to try to get these guys their work in, because you saw Florida got rained out on a doubleheader today. I mean, there's only about 20 or so games left. And in Florida, who knows, they might only play about 12 to 15 of those games. So there's really not much to be gained at this point by moving these guys up. Hey, might as well leave them here on the outside chance they make the playoffs. Hey, let's get them a little bit of playoff experience and get them some extra work in.
Yeah, and I think we're going to go ahead and kind of skip over the rookie leagues. Just suffice to say that Danville has really been struggling lately. They are currently on a 6-game losing streak, though they are doing well tonight. They are leading 11-6 in the top of the ninth. So hopefully the D-Braves will break that losing streak tonight. Obviously, their way is not going to be helped at all by losing DeVito and Bryce Ball, but hopefully they can at least end their season on a positive note. Well, Matt, any final thoughts before we cut this thing off?
No, I mean, it's obviously quite an eventful week, and I think we're going to see some more movement, things happening over the next week or so. I think a lot of it's going to, the linchpin's going to be Austin Riley, the severity of his knee injury. If it looks like it's going to keep him out for the rest of the season, that'll put him on the 60-day IL and free up a roster spot, and who knows, we may be moving some folks on up again next week.
Maybe Rafael Ortega will finally get a shot.
Oh, if only.
All right, folks. Have a great rest of the week, and we'll be back with you hopefully on Monday.
See you again next week.
Non, rien de rien. Non, je ne regrette rien. Ni le bien qu'on m'a fait, ni le mal. Payé, balayé, oublié, je me fous du passé avec mes souvenirs. J'ai allumé le feu, mes chagrins, mes plaisirs. Je n'ai plus besoin d'eux, balayer les amours. Avec leur trémolo, balayé pour toujours, je repars à zéro. Non, rien de rien. Non, je ne regrette rien, ni le bien. Ma vie, car mes joies aujourd'hui, ça commence avec toi.
You gotta love the Alan Jackson experience. Alan Jackson, give me a break.
I'm sorry, this isn't the Nakahoma Nation podcast, sir.
You gotta love you some Alan Jackson.